History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Did you know that Adolf Hitler didn't die in World War II, but instead escaped Berlin? He did so because he was removed from his bunker by a helicopter, then flown from Austria to Spain, and then he was put on a submarine and brought across the ocean to Argentina. Now, nothing I just said right there is true. But a lot of people believe that's true because there's a whole cottage industry built around the conspiracy theory that Adolf Hitler was able to escape to South America and he lived there for numerous years and fathered children with Eva Braun and was plotting a return to power and establishing a Fourth Reich. According to numerous official accounts of eyewitnesses who were in the bunker with Hitler, he did shoot himself, then loyal Nazis burned his body, and the bones were removed by the Russians. But right after World War II, 50% of Americans didn't believe the captured Nazis who said Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun had committed suicide. They thought that he faked his death and escaped justice. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Robert Hutchinson, who's author of the new book, The Death of Hitler, What Really Happened. Robert surveyed all of the accounts of the people who are in the bunker with Hitler, and he's also looked at new forensic evidence of people who've analyzed the material remains of what is claimed to be Adolf Hitler, and we can finally and definitively say what happened. But we're not just looking at Adolf Hitler's death, we're also looking at how conspiracy theories are made, how do you sniff out when something is probably a conspiracy theory, and why the History Channel is a complete waste of your time, because they have a 3-season series called Hunting Hitler, The Final Evidence, which is based on almost no evidence whatsoever. It's a case of a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy claimed that he saw Hitler one time walking around Argentina, stuff like that. So we learned about the final end of one of history's greatest monsters, but also why the conspiracy theories about him aren't true, and how to sniff out other conspiracy theories and separate the wheat from the chaff. A lot of really useful things here that Bob brings to the discussion, and I hope you enjoyed this discussion with Bob Hutchinson. Hey, Bob, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Scott.
Yeah, this is a big year for you. We talked about Abraham Lincoln and the manhunt after his death, and now we're going to look at what happened to Adolf Hitler. And this is a topic I look forward to getting into. I was talking with Bob off the air before we recorded that when I get questions from the audience, about 20% of them have to do with Adolf Hitler. So I've been forced to look at a lot of different aspects of his life. But this particular topic of what happened after his death is something that I've encountered well before I became a historian. I think going all the way back to grade school when I was standing in line at the grocery store and I'd see copies of the Weekly World News claiming that, oh, we have news of where Adolf Hitler ended up right next to a sighting of Elvis and Bat Boy. So there's weird stuff in this whole topic we'll get into. But I'm curious, Bob, as you were researching this topic, what were some of the strangest theories of what happened to Hitler that you encountered as you were trying to find the truth?
Well, I mean, they run the gamut. The secret Nazi base in Antarctica, where Hitler has been plotting his, for decades to take over the world again, things like that. And with all of these conspiracy theories, there's kernels of truth that allow them to grow, little seeds. Like there was a Nazi expedition to Antarctica. They actually did go there to check it out. So every one of the conspiracy theories, and including the main ones, have a lot of evidence that people can point to try and build a case for their conspiracy theory. But ultimately, it falls apart because they can't actually produce any proof beyond circumstantial evidence. But that circumstantial evidence is usually there. And so people are able to spin a yarn, and they have been doing for 75 years.
Right. And we'll leave Iron Sky, the idea that Nazis have a secret moon base, on the table. Although I'm sure there's someone out there who believes it. I'm almost positive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I wasn't even going to go there, but yes.
All right. Well, let's start off. What made you interested in this topic, and what made you think that, okay, this deserves another treatment because I have something new to add to this conversation?
Well, it really wasn't me. I mean, what people don't realize is that in 2009, what happened was that the Russians finally allowed a Western team of forensic scientists, pathologists, to examine their great relic, or treasure from the war, which was a piece of skull, which they had said belonged to Adolf Hitler, had a bullet hole in it. And this Western pathologist, 2009, went to Moscow and he examined it. And he said it wasn't Hitler's, that it was the skull fragment from a woman under 40 years of age. He wouldn't say if it was Eva Braun or not, but it definitely wasn't Hitler. And this led to literally headlines across the world that said, it turns out Hitler may not have died in the bunker after all. And so this fed a slew of conspiracy theory books that came out right after 2009. And then in 2015, the History Channel launched an entire reality TV series that lasted for 3 years, right up to 2018, that examined the possibility that Hitler had actually escaped from the bunker and lived the rest of his life peacefully in Argentina with Eva Braun. And they kept that going for 3 years. So it wasn't so much me that went to this story. The story was there, and it really did need a full treatment from the beginning to examine what we do and do not know. And that's what we try to do with this What Really Happened series, is to get to the bottom line and sort through all the evidence and tell you what we actually know and what we don't know. And that's what I tried to do with this book.
Well, let's start off with the early theories about what happened to Hitler. Of course, he wasn't brought to trial or anything, so his end has always been a little bit mysterious. What was the original story about Hitler's death, and why didn't people believe it?
Well, the original story, first of all, people don't realize that the Western allies, meaning the United States Army and the British and so on, didn't actually enter Berlin for 2 months after the end of the war. We allowed the Soviet army to conquer Berlin and rape and pillage, which is exactly what they did, and basically stood outside and waited for 2 months before we actually entered. So we were not there when they actually raided the bunker and everything. So the first news that we had that Hitler died came from the Germans themselves. It was radio reports that were monitored in London that said that Hitler had died in the bunker. And that resulted in headlines across the world that Hitler was dead. There was a famous Stars and Stripes headline that literally took up half the newspaper. I don't even know how, 10,000 point type or something. It just said Hitler dead. But that's all they had. I mean, they basically took the Germans' word for it. Okay. And then after the Russians came in there, the Russians had some initial reports that said they had found a body of Hitler that was a local that they thought was Hitler. But then they 2 days later, they said, no, it wasn't Hitler. It was just somebody who looked like him. And then finally, after going back and forth, they finally said that actually they hadn't found the body of Hitler and that they thought he had escaped, probably with the help of the Western allies. The precursor to the CIA had helped Hitler escape. So that was the status quo, really, for about 40 years. Now, after the war, they found survivors in the bunker who had been there, and they told their story to intelligence officers and eventually to a British historian who wrote the definitive account of what happened to Hitler based on the testimonies of the people that were in the bunker. And they said that what happened was the story we all know, that was done in the shown very masterfully in the 2004 movie, German movie Downfall, which is that Hitler and Eva Braun committed suicide after being married, and then their aides immediately took their bodies up from the bunker below Berlin to a trench and doused them with gasoline and set them on fire, their bodies on fire, and that they burned through the night. And then they were then placed in another crater later that night and covered with dirt. And Hugh Trevor Roper, who wrote the definitive account, said, that's the last we know of them. We have no idea what happened after that. And so that was basically the story for most of the 20th century, is that the surviving denizens of the bunker had set Hitler's body on fire, Hitler and his wife's body on fire, and they were burned, but then they vanished. We have no idea what happened to them. And it wasn't until about 1968 or so that finally the Russians admitted that they had actually found some remains. And they dribbled out the story in typical Russian fashion. They dribbled out the story piece by piece, a little bit of information at a time. So that allowed the conspiracy theories to grow, because they had not found a body. The Western allies had not found a body Everybody was going on the basis of what the eyewitnesses claimed they had seen. And everyone asked the question, well, you know, loyal Nazis would have, of course, covered up the fact that the Führer escaped and would have said whatever they wanted to say, whatever they thought people would believe, and that it's very likely Hitler escaped and that they either murdered a body double or somebody else's body was burned or something like that. And that story just kept continually to grow over the decades, and it became probably the primary alternative account of what happened to Hitler. But it was all based on a deliberate lie by the Russians, and no one really knows why they did it, but they basically lied and said they hadn't found anything when they had actually found the charred remains of Hitler and Eva Braun in a trench, and they kept them hidden for 25 years.
Well, I want to explore these alternate theories before we get to your take on it, but why do you think Russia claimed that there were no remains of Hitler?
Some people said that they were afraid that a neo-Nazi movement, the Russians lost 10 million people fighting, stopping Hitler. We lost 350,000 U.S. soldiers, but they lost 10 million people. They didn't want to go through this again. And they were afraid that a neo-Nazi movement might arise. And so bizarrely, they thought they could keep evidence of Hitler's death hidden. And then if somebody claimed to be Hitler, they could come back and prove it or something like that. I mean, it really doesn't make sense, because basically Stalin lied through his teeth and told Truman and others that they looked for Hitler's body and hadn't found it, that it was gone. It was a mystery. And in fact, what they had found the charred remains of Hitler and Eva Braun and the entire Goebbels family. They had done a primitive autopsy a week later in a suburb of Berlin. And then they took those remains and they temporarily buried them in a forest outside Germany. And then they took them to a place called Magdeburg, which is a suburb of Berlin. And they buried them under an NKVD safe house. The garage, it's so bizarre that it sounds unbelievable that this is literally what happened. They had a kind of a motor pool area where they worked on cars. So there was a big trench in the ground, and they buried them in this trench in Magdeburg. For 25 years, they were secretly hidden there. And then in 1970, Yuri Andropov, who was then the intelligence officer, they were going to give Germany back to the Germans. In other words, the Soviet Union was going to yield control of East Germany to the German communist government. And they were afraid that somebody might discover Hitler's hidden remains in Magdeburg. So they ordered a team to go disinter whatever was left and incinerate them, basically cremate whatever was left again, and scatter the dust in a nearby river. And that is ultimately what happened to Adolf Hitler, is his remains were disinterred where they had been hidden for 25 years, burned again, and then scattered. But they kept a couple of fragments. They kept this bone fragment, which they thought was from his skull, and they kept his jawbone. And those were the two relics that they kept in their archives in Moscow. And it wasn't until very, very late, in the early 1970s, they released photographs. And then finally, they never allowed anybody to physically touch any of this stuff until 2009, when they finally allowed an American pathologist to examine the skull fragment. And he so traumatized them by denying that it was actually Hitler's, they took them another decade before they'd let anybody else. And finally, in 2017, they allowed a forensic team to examine the jawbone. And it wasn't until 2018, literally 2 years ago, that a peer-reviewed scientific article was published that said, in fact, that jawbone was scientifically certain to be that of Adolf Hitler's, and so he could not have escaped and lived in Argentina. That's how recent it was that they actually were able to physically prove that Hitler died in the bunker, 2017-18.
Right, and that's an interesting story that this went on for so long, and I'd love to talk about the rat line theory and how I think most Americans believe this after the war, that Hitler had not died, but he had escaped. So tell me about the development of this myth and what people believed about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was fed by the Odessa File, Frederick Forsyth's great novel about it. And then again, all of this stuff is reinforced by actual events. You know, when there were Nazis that escaped, Adolf Eichmann and so on. So in 1960, when the Israelis kidnapped Eichmann and brought him to Jerusalem, people became aware that some prominent Nazis had escaped. And it made it to Argentina, and that there was a German colony in Argentina, and that there were kind of an underground neo-Nazi or sympathetic to the Nazi movement in Argentina, in Latin America generally. So that gave credence once again to the idea that, well, if Adolf Eichmann escaped, surely the Führer himself could have escaped. And there was so much plausibility to a lot of these scenarios. But what they actually didn't have was any proof. And that's what we can get to later, is when you actually examine the books that claim that Hitler escaped, you finally discover, and I describe this in detail, say it's a 250-page book, they'll go on for 230 pages about the background information, about Nazi submarines, about how planes were landing in the Tiergarten up to, April 29th, which is true. All of this is true. And they'll go into detail about Nazi gold and how other prominent Nazis were able to escape and how there was a German colony. And they spend 20 pages discussing on whatever Hitler actually in Argentina. In other words, there's no proof whatsoever. There's no proof that Adolf Hitler lived in Argentina at all. These are just based on hearsay testimony of people that told somebody who then told a friend who wrote it down but lost that original document. That's literally what the books are like. So,
but Bob, you don't understand. They know a guy. They know a guy.
They know a guy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the entire History Channel narrative about Hitler possibly escaping was based on, this is another part of the story I forgot to mention. Around 2014, I believe, Barack Obama authorized the release of formerly top secret FBI files and some CIA files of their investigations of what happened to Adolf Hitler. And there were headlines across the world about that. There were 780 pages, in fact, of top secret, formerly top secret FBI files. And they included reports from various people about sightings of Hitler. And one of them was a 1945 or 46 account of a Los Angeles Times reporter who met a guy in a bar in Los Angeles who said that he was on the beach when a Nazi submarine landed and met a delegation from the Argentine government, and they went on burros across the Andes to a small town in Argentina, and the guy never saw this guy again, didn't know his name, went back to the bar for 2 weeks trying to see him. And that was it. And that report became the basis, or at least the kickoff, of the History Channel's three-year investigation into whether Hitler escaped. It was a guy telling a guy in a bar in L.A. that he saw Hitler.
That's the History Channel right there.
Well, that is what it is. And most of the conspiracy stuff is like that. It's amazingly frustrating when you actually read through it all and you realize, wait a minute, you're saying that a guy told a guy about his meetings with Hitler, and he wrote it down in a paper and described all the detail, but he lost that paper when he moved houses over a 30-year lifetime. But then he told you this, and you reconstructed it from memory, and on that's the basis we're supposed to believe that Adolf Hitler lived with Eva Braun in Argentina until 1960, and they had two daughters. So that's what it's like.
Well, yeah, I mean, History Channel needs to stick to aliens building pyramids and what they know best. And listeners, don't watch. History Channel is worse than neutral. It's bad. It teaches people wrong information. I mean, stick to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. That show doesn't lie to you. It doesn't say things that aren't true. But this is really useful because I want to see how myths get spun out of control and understand how conspiracy theories come from and how can you spot things that aren't true when they're covering other topics. One thing that is the basis of this idea that Hitler and Eva Braun escaped was his use of body doubles. So could you describe why it wasn't plausible that he could have used one in the bunker and then he and Eva Braun escaped?
Well, I mean, it's plausible in the sense that he did use body doubles.
Right.
One of the conspiracy theories is one of the books, Grey Wolf, which is probably the best of the conspiracy books that Hitler got away. They try to use a British academic who claims that through facial recognition software, he can say that the person who met with Hitler Youth on Hitler's 56th birthday could not have been Hitler based on that. But that's kind of how they try and use the body double theory. Hitler did apparently use body doubles, although not as often as people thought. And the Russians did find a guy who looked a lot like Hitler dead in the couple of days after they raided the bunker. But they quickly got some people that knew Hitler personally, or some Russians who had met Hitler personally. And they said, no, that is absolutely not Hitler. So as with all of these things, it's plausible if there was any evidence, but there is no evidence. And there's an overwhelming eyewitness testimony. Every single person in the bunker, and most of them survived, by the way, wrote accounts of what happened. And they agree to a shocking degree. And you can say, okay, they were trying to cover up the Führer's escape, but they stuck to their story until I think Rokas Misch, who was the telephone operator and SS bodyguard, the last surviving member of the bunker, I think he died in 2013 at the age of 96. They wrote their memoirs in their 80s and sometimes in their 90s, and 70 years after these events, and they stuck to their stories. That combined with the physical evidence, i.e. the fact that we've now proven that Hitler's jawbone was absolutely his on the basis of dental records and x-rays that they took of his skull after the July 20th bombing. The evidence was overwhelming on the side that he died the way we thought he had died, which is by killing himself in the bunker. But that doesn't mean that conspiracy theorists aren't able to make a plausible case that, yes, Hitler had body doubles. And as I said, yes, they had planes land in the Tiergarten on the boulevard there in the Tiergarten. I was just there in February, and I looked at this big broad avenue and say, yeah, this is a perfect runway for a plane. It's a straight gigantic boulevard in the middle of the Tiergarten. So again, the reason fake history or fake news continues is because there are elements of plausibility to it, and otherwise people would just dismiss it. And it's the job of historians is to say, well, just because it's plausible doesn't mean it's true, or just because it's possible it doesn't mean it's true.
Right.
What is the actual evidence? And we have physical evidence, and we also have the overwhelming testimony of every single eyewitness in the bunker said the same thing, what ultimately happened to Hitler.
Hey everyone, Scott here. We're going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors. Just for that point there, the consensus among those who are in the bunker, that's doing some detective work for a historian, which historians have to do a lot of times because you can't always just point to a written document over a certain thing. And I heard one person argue that if an event isn't true, then the story that a group of people make up will probably fall apart. An example is with Watergate, the insiders turned into a circular firing squad and were indicting each other because the story fell apart under enough pressure. Would you say, just your sense in history that with a group of people, if they're all describing the same thing and stick to the story, that's very strong proof that it's true? Or can you think of any other counterexamples that people could stick to a story that isn't true out of a conspiracy?
Well, it's true in New Testament studies. Because I cut my teeth studying early Christianity. And one of the arguments against the truth of the Gospels is that they disagree on details, okay? And the conspiracy people spend a lot of time, usually about half their book sometimes, going into minor disagreements between the eyewitnesses in the bunker about what happened. Some people say Hitler was shot in the temple, the right temple or the left temple. Some of the early eyewitnesses said he shot himself through the mouth. Other people said that he was on the sofa lying to his right. And another eyewitness said, no, he was sitting in a chair. when they found the body. So the conspiracy theory books, especially Jerome Corsi and the authors of Grey Wolf, will spend a lot of time examining what the eyewitnesses said and point to minor discrepancies in the details. And what police investigators will tell you is, well, it's when people agree exactly on all the details that you know is likely phony, huh. That they've gotten together and they've cooked up their story and they're sticking to it. It's when they disagree about minor details that you start to think that maybe this is the truth, because people are flawed. They have flawed memories. They don't remember things exactly. One person says it was a red car. Another one says, no, it was a dark blue car. The police are very used to that. And so they look for broad patterns of truth, you know, basically the big picture. If the big picture is true, then it probably is. If they disagree on details, that's just because they're human beings. If they don't disagree on details, that's when they start to suspect that it was rehearsed, that people got together and got their story in alignment. And the Hitler testimonies are like that. They disagree on minor details, but the big picture, they agree exactly about what happened. It was just, you know, whether Hitler was lying on the sofa when they found his body or sitting in a chair, those kind of minor details. And of course, it was the end of the war. They didn't know if they were going to survive the day, let alone live for 40, 50, 60 more years to tell their stories. So, and the people that were writing these often were very, very old by the time they actually penned their memoirs. People don't realize that. Some of these people didn't write their memoirs until the 1980s or 90s. Some of them, Gunche, for example, refused to say anything. He was the only one that didn't actually discuss what he saw. He was Hitler's right-hand man, sort of in the bunker. But everybody else wrote memoirs about it 60, 70 years after the fact. So yeah, their memories might have been hazy or whatever, but they pretty much stuck to their story for decades afterwards.
All right. Well, yeah, I really love this because I love getting into how do you report history? And because this is a contemporary enough event, we have eyewitnesses that we can talk to and cross-examine things and show how to avoid going down the rabbit trail of a conspiracy theory. And I think I was making an argument with someone about aliens that I don't think they exist, because if a civilization were capable of interstellar travel, why would they just come and goof around with fighter pilots and abduct people from trailer parks? I mean, wouldn't there be more science? And going with Hitler, let's say that Hitler and Eva Braun really did make it to Latin America. What kind of evidence would pop up that would convince you, okay, this did happen? Because as you've said, the evidence just isn't there.
Well, yeah. First, you know, some photographs. What they have in the FBI files is they have one picture taken, I believe, in 1955. It's super, super grainy. It was a copy of a copy of a picture of a guy who vaguely looks like Hitler with a little Hitler mustache. And this is the evidence that they have that Hitler was in Argentina. This one photograph was in the FBI files where people said that people referred to him as Der Führer and all that. So I would expect that eventually, after 75 years, after everybody's dead, photographs would arise. There'd be physical archaeological remnants that people could sift through, you know, that Hitler left behind, possessions. One of the conspiracy books claimed that Hitler had a daughter. Hitler and Eva Braun had a daughter, Ursula, who was passed off as Fegelein's daughter, but was really theirs. And then they later had another daughter while they were living in Argentina. But they had, and then they just dropped that. They have no proof whatsoever about any of it. And they say that Eva Braun continued to live they had heard in an old folks home up until her 90s, but have no discussion of it or any evidence of that or any photographs or any documentary evidence or any eyewitness testimony, any aides, old folks home aides who came forward to say, oh, yeah, I cared for Eva Braun in her 80s. And she told me the whole story, and I was sworn to secrecy, but now that she's dead, I can tell the world the truth. None of that. None of that exists. So I could come up with a whole bunch of criteria that would satisfy me. If you had a dozen eyewitnesses who claim that they met Eva Braun, and they will testify to that, or that they saw Hitler, and they've got photographs of them, Hitler as an old man. Why don't they have any of this? There is nothing like that. All they have, as I said, is a dead guy who told somebody else who wrote it down and then lost the paper and then re-remembered it. That's the kind of evidence they have. And I would want to have at least one or two eyewitnesses come forward who said they actually met Hitler or they met Eva Braun or they met Eva Braun's daughter, Ursula, who would conceivably still be alive if this was all true. But they don't have any of that. And what really amazes me is that people like the History Channel continue with this stuff seriously. I mean, a former CIA case officer ran the operation, and I don't know if you've seen the series, but they dispatch teams to Berlin and to South America, and that makes it, and they use the latest scientific equipment, and they've got ground sonar and all this stuff. And they weren't able to come up with any evidence. All they were able to come up with evidence is that there were Germans in South America. There were subway tunnels in Berlin. The Nazis, some top Nazis were able to escape, like Adolf Eichmann. There was gold. The Nazis secreted away gold. And that's it. It's all circumstantial evidence. They don't have actually any real evidence for Hitler's life in Argentina. But it's a fun story, I've got to say.
Yeah, it is. And I guess the takeaway, listeners, is don't watch the History Channel. Keeping up with the Kardashians is a better use of your time than that. So I guess I'm not going to get sponsored by them anytime soon. But probably not. When you were researching this, what do you think is the most surprising thing that you discovered?
It was nice to revisit the entire Nazi era. I can't jokingly say my children must have been alarmed at the growing pile of Nazi books in my office and how my Netflix feed had nothing but World War II documentaries. But I think the people are fascinated by Hitler, and the reason World War II books continue to sell this day is just how rapidly they were able to take over a very ancient and civilized society and basically create the most devastation the world had ever seen very, very quickly. And you really do find out how quickly civilization can collapse if you have determined people who are determined to take it over. I was fascinated by the rise of Hitler, by how fast he was able to take control, how he was able to use the democratic process. People don't realize this, but the Nazis didn't have stage a coup exactly. They won fair and square in elections through the parliamentary system. It's very complicated, you know, what percentage they got. They got a certain number of seats. There was no clear winner in a parliamentary contest. And so the president appointed Hitler, which was the way they were supposed to do it, as chancellor to form a government through a coalition of political parties. And Hitler was able to use the democratic process to gain power. And then he immediately used various legal maneuvers to assume dictatorial powers. Right away, there was a fire in the Reichstag, so they quickly assumed basically martial law. It was plausible that there were communists behind it. The Russian Revolution was fresh in everyone's mind, where the Russians had shot thousands of people and just took control. The communists had taken control. So people were very much afraid of that in Germany, and Hitler used that excuse to take over the government in very quickly. Within 6 months, he had absolute power. So that was a startling story in itself that I don't think a lot of people remember much, or at least a lot of young people today don't know how quickly government can be taken over by determined men who are willing to act ruthlessly. That's sort of the lesson of the Nazi era. You have to guard freedom very carefully because it can be taken away very fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I'm curious about that you mentioned earlier when you were talking about the forensic tests on Hitler's jaw that proved incontrovertibly that it was, in fact, him. And this data was only released in 2018. Why do you think it took so long for them to do this?
Because the Russians kept the evidence in their archives, and we were basically a state of war with Russia for most of the 20th century. They were not going to release that information. They stuck to their story that Hitler had probably got away, and they don't know where. And it wasn't until really after the fall of the Soviet Union that people finally were able to get access to some of the archives. And as I said, they kept dribbling off information. So basically, this whole conspiracy theory began as part of a Russian disinformation campaign in the years right after World War II. It was maintained by Russian paranoia over decades and their refusal to allow anyone to examine any of their archival material that they had, which they kept locked away in the KGB archives. And then also by the fact that when they did decide to release information, they released it piecemeal. They didn't just open up their archives and say, okay, everybody, here's what we got. Instead, they dribbled it out. They let somebody publish a book in 1968 that said that they had in fact found some remains of Hitler. And then they allowed photographs of Hitler's jaw to be published, but not to be examined physically. It was that kind of thing. And it took decades between each of these events until finally they only allowed somebody to physically examine the skull that they claimed was Hitler's in 2009. And they only allowed someone to examine the jawbone in 2017. That's just absolutely astonishing. And yet, you know, we've had the story for 75 years. And this kind of fake news has continued, or this fake history that the Russians were peddling fueled these conspiracy theories. Maybe that was their original plan, was just to plant uncertainty that people didn't know what happened to Hitler. Maybe that was Stalin's big idea, was just to keep the subject open so people would continue to discuss it and think that there was a possibility that Hitler was out there somewhere planning the return of the Fourth Reich. Maybe that was what was running through. Nobody really knows why Stalin did this, what his motive was to deliberately lie, because they found Hitler's remains. They did an autopsy on the remains, but they lied about it. That's the bottom line. The Russians lied about finding Hitler's remains after the war.
Well, I really love looking at topics like this because the subject itself is very interesting of what happened to Hitler, but for people who read the book, it's not just that story. It's being able to identify a conspiracy theory, being able to understand why it's wrong. So it can apply to this, but it can also apply to other conspiracy theories. What do you hope that people take away from reading your book, in addition to things that we discussed?
Well, one thing I hope they take away and that I learned a lot about was the German resistance movement. There were a lot of people that resisted Hitler. There were a lot of people that realized that he was a mass murderer, that saw firsthand the atrocities in going on in Russia and so on. A lot of people don't realize that Hitler didn't just start killing the Jews. He also started killing the Russians, most specifically the Russian Commissars, which were the political intelligence officers that were in every army unit. And the kind of the loss of innocence for the German army and for ordinary Germans was when they got what's called the Commissar Order, which was that when they found a Russian Commissar and they had a special uniform, they had a special insignia, so they were easily identified, they were to be shot on the spot. And the Germans, the professional officer corps knew this was a war crime, and they didn't want to do it. And yet the orders came that they were told they were basically to be treated as spies, and they weren't real soldiers. They were spies and therefore could be shot as spies. But the soldiers that did this knew that that wasn't true and that it was a potential war crime. So that was that first real loss of innocence, I think, for the German army, was this kind of thing. And I hope people, when they read this book, they find out that people that saw this decided very early on that Hitler had to go. And there were 40 attempts to kill Hitler. And they talk about the luck of the devil. The Stauffenberg Operation Valkyrie was the last one. It too failed because Hitler had this uncanny ability to not be where he was supposed to be. And he didn't stay any place very long. So every attempt to bomb him, there was another famous attempt, Georg Elser, who tried to blow up Hitler and almost succeeded. These things taught the German people that the only way that this was going to end was by blowing up Hitler or killing Hitler. And that's another part of the story that we haven't even discussed about all the attempts to get rid of Hitler by killing him.
Well, there's a lot to check out here, and people can look for it themselves in the book, What Really Happened, The Death of Hitler. Where can people go to buy it?
It's at fine bookstores everywhere. If people still go to bookstores, my bookstore is the book table at Costco. And that's what we've been reduced to. But it's I think it might be at Costco or at Sam's Club. You can order it online on Amazon and through Regnery Press. They also sell, I think, directly. There's links at regnery.com where you can buy it there or on Amazon.
All right. Sounds great. And I'll put the link to it in the show notes. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Scott, thanks for having me again. It's been fun.
All right, listeners, well, that is all that I have for today's episode. Once again, I want to start things off by thanking the Spymasters of History Unplugged. I'll explain what that is in a second. Our Spymasters include Bill Ivey, Moondoggy from Ohio, Tom from Ohio, Ryan Gillen, Rob from Chicago, Nick Brooks, Michael from New York, Carl from Norway, Josh Reddick, Jennifer French Lee, Jake Carrington, McCrays, Salvador Sanchez, David Santee, Chris C., and Baron Fraser. If you'd like to support the show, there's some very easy ways to do so. First, go to the site halfpricehistory.com. I've worked out an arrangement with a lot of the authors who've appeared on this show, and you can go there and get their books for 50% off. All you have to do is go to halfpricehistory.com and enter the promo code UNPLUGGED at checkout. Second, please leave a review and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast player of choice, whether Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher or whatever. Third, join our Facebook group. You can go to Facebook and search for History Unplugged. There, you can talk with other fans of the show about recent episodes, what you liked, what you didn't like. Also, I have exclusive content there, such as live streams, where I do live versions of podcast episodes, where you can leave feedback as I'm talking, and I will address it on air. Last, and I think this is the best, is to join our membership program, the Knowlton's Rangers. The Knowlton's Rangers were George Washington's spies during the Revolutionary War, but it's also the name of the membership program for History Unplugged. If you go to patreon.com/unplugged, you can join the membership program at three levels. If you join at the Scout level, you'll get all 400 episodes of History Unplugged absolutely ad-free and early access to new episodes. If you join at the second level, the Intelligence Officer level, get all the stuff that Scouts get, along with bonus episodes. There's currently about 40 of them, including series on Audie Murphy and Operation Long Jump about the Nazi attempt to assassinate FDR, Churchill, and Stalin in 1943. Finally, if you join at the Spymaster level, you'll get a shout-out to you and or your business at the end of each episode. You get a three-pack of hardcover history books, and you can find out what those are if you go to patreon.com/unplugged. Finally, you can ask me a question about history on absolutely any topic on earth, and I will research it and devote an entire episode to your question. Probably about 30% of the questions in the archive for the show have been based on these sorts of questions. So there you go. Go to patreon.com/unplugged to learn more. All right, well, that is all for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.